November 9, 2013. It's a Watt from Pedro show.
Thank you.
Pedro Show, Saturday morning, Not at the Love Grotto with Brother Matt. No, I'm here in my pad. Got Pride with Tom Arawo coming up right after this, because tomorrow we fly to Brazil to do gigs Monday and Tuesday. It'll be my third time there. But first time for Tom Arawo, and first time for Watt going not as a stooge. So, yeah. Pretty, what do you say, excited, huh? I should say what we played. We started off with Welcome from John Coltrane, then 6 P.S. by Sawako, and then finally something from kind of a guest, okay? Well, he is a guest, but Kings of Lower Town, Mississippi Flood. What I'm trying to say is Mike McKee, Pembroke, Ontario, did an interview with me via Skype. Now, this was on October 14th, so it's a spiel, and it's in real time, but it just wasn't done right now. But I recorded it on the Mac purse while I was rapping with him, and I'd like to play it for you now. Mike McKee from Kings of Lower Town, Pembroke, Ontario, October 14, 2013. Rapping with Watt. It's October 14th, 2013, and via Skype, I'm with Mike McKee.
I'm at my hometown, Pembroke, Ontario.
Yeah. Pembroke.
Yes, sir.
And what big town is that by?
Ottawa.
That's what I thought, because Ottawa's where, didn't I play, where did I play, Mavericks?
You sure did, yeah. Yeah. Last year.
With my missing man. For the Hyphenated Man Third Opera Tour.
Did you like playing there?
Yeah, I hadn't been there in a long time. I think the last time was a club called Saffron Beeblebrox.
You were there with Firehose one time.
I think there was two of those. But that was the last time I was there. And the time before that was, I can't even remember the venue. It was with Minuteman and Porcelain Forehead, which was a Canadian band, maybe 1984?
It goes a while back.
Yeah, so I haven't played Ottawa much. I should play it more. Actually, you know what? That one in 84 wasn't Ottawa. That was across the river in Hull.
Yeah. There's a big bridge, takes you right across.
But I can't remember the name of the venue. I do know Porcelain Forehead played with us. And Montreal, too.
It was a good show.
We did two gigs with them, yeah. And the Montreal show was Porcelain Forehead and maybe Drunken Engine or something like this. And then another band, My Dog Popper, which I know made some albums later, too. So,
do you think you'll come up more?
Yeah, we're talking about, you know, almost 30 years ago, okay? So it's hard for me to remember. But, yeah, well, you know, you're usually doing the big towns, but smaller ones like Ottawa and London, they're good to play, you know? I wish I could play some more smaller Canadian towns. It's just hard fit, you know, it's a big place like the U.S. So to fit them in is a little tough. Like, I've never played Maritime yet.
You have to do that because it's probably a really good experience.
Of course.
It's lovely.
I like to play anywhere and everywhere. It's just fitting them in, you know.
Understood.
Yeah, there's a lot of distance. But, you know, I'm going to make it a goal to try to get up more and more all the time. I know I enjoy seeing Canadian bands when they get to play down here. So... I just interviewed a guy from, he lived for a while in Toronto and in Montreal. His name is Alex. He's got a band called Dirty Beaches. Although he's relocated to Berlin, he's living there. But I just had him on the show. An interesting journey with music he's had. So, yeah, forget about my, attempts at trying to play every town in the world, which I am trying. We should get Mike into your fucking story about music. When do you remember the first time being conscious about music?
You know, at an early age, my mom was a piano player, so that would be kind of where it started.
Yeah, so you had music in the house.
A little bit, not a whole lot. My brother would bring home albums as well, so that was important too. We'd listen to it.
So that's when you first...
I guess, you know, in grade school, I met a couple of people who were really into music and just started to grow from there, and we'd, you know,
you mean
start to put it, trade albums.
Your ma, she wanted the piano playing ending with her. She didn't think you should take lessons or something.
She thought I wasn't good enough. She was right.
Oh, so you did try.
I tried a bit.
Okay. How old were you?
Oh, you know, grade one, grade two.
So like five or six or something like that?
Yeah, in that neighborhood, yeah.
So you tried plinking and she thought, no. Okay.
So, yeah, that all went away and then
so
just, you know.
Your music connects as far as like making music started with cats you met at school.
I would say so, yeah.
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 And what, this is still grade school?
Yeah, I met a couple of really interesting people. This guy named Jordan Zadorozny really profoundly affected everyone around him. He was a really massive talent, even at that age. We knew something was going on there.
What did he
play? It was intense, very intense. And
what instruments did he play?
He was pretty much good at everything at an early age. Really great on fiddle, guitar, piano that was developing. It was all happening. It was quite something.
Amazing.
And, of course, you know, you wanted to be a part of that. It was really interesting to us.
Right. What, did he make a band?
We had, a lot of sort of pretend bands. And then...
What does pretend mean?
Well, you know, this is what we would do. We sort of imagined how it would be. And he, of course, had, you know, this amazing talent and started doing it. And then we were blown away. It was...
you mean you guys weren't actually playing with each other, just talking about playing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he actually was playing.
Yeah.
So did anybody want to form a band with this guy? Mr. Zach? His name's Zach?
Say it again.
Z-A-C-H, Zach? Was that his name?
No, it was Jordan Zadorozny.
Oh, Zadorozny.
Yeah.
Okay, Jordan.
Yes.
God, my memory's so bad, I can't remember from 5 minutes. Okay, Jordan here. Did anybody want to make a band with this Jordan guy?
You know, sure, absolutely. In the end, he did his own thing. We started doing our own thing. Just moved along, and he started to get really good at what he was doing. And he did eventually start doing lots of interesting things.
George,
we were left behind.
You never got a chance to play with him.
It just, you know, informally when we were younger, and then later on we started playing a bit together.
Jordan, I think that maybe he's an important as an inspiration.
Without a doubt, yes.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it was there.
So he's profound to you as far as you getting involved with music. So, What instrument did you gravitate to?
It was, you know, bass, guitars.
Bass and guitars.
Piano.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't ask you about the music. What kind of albums were getting brought home that you were listening to?
You know, just classic rock, The Who, early R.E.M., those things.
I guess Canada would be the Guess Who also. Right.
Yeah.
I listened to them a lot when I was young. In fact, I think the first 45 I bought was... American Woman.
Pretty good band. I mean, listening to them now, it was, you know, they had a really good thing happening.
Randy Bachman, the guitar player, quit kind of early and made his own band called Bachman Turner Overdrive, who I also saw play a few times. Yeah, D. Boone really liked him also. So, okay, so it's like classic rock. And at school, I mean, we're talking grade school, so for you, what's that? Is that the 70s?
Late 70s, you know, up to about 1986, 85.
Okay.
Then we moved into middle school, and yeah.
And what? You start putting together groups and writing songs?
A little bit, yeah. We would, you know, start recording on little four tracks and, okay. You know, getting it together.
Do you remember the first band you had, like, as far as, you giving it a name? And...
Yeah, I played in this band with two good guys. It was called Blue Channel Fun.
Blue Channel Fun.
Yeah, and we had a good time doing that. Two really nice people.
It was like kind of a power trio?
Yeah, and we, you know, crafted out, played a couple of shows. It was nice.
Did you ever record on the four track?
We had a couple of things, yeah. I was still sort of learning the ropes on how to make songs then, and they sort of were at the controls, and it was good. It was a good learning experience. A nice time.
You should flow me. If you got recordings of that stuff, you should flow.
Yeah, the guy's the main songwriter. His name was Conrad Crispin, and he wrote some good songs. I'll definitely do that because I still listen to them from time to time.
Okay, then what happened from there?
Nothing. We had to get real jobs and become workers and, you know, get our lives together.
When you were in junior high school?
Well, after we graduated.
Oh, you mean this band continued all the way from junior high and high school, huh?
Actually, no. It was, you know, informal. And then later on after high school, we still had it going on.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. Okay. It was like after high school we would.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, you had to make a living and stuff. So, yeah. But I didn't know that this band lasted this long. So it was all through junior high and high school. Okay. So
you we didn't actually have a name for it back then.
Just something to do after school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
We would like jam in a friend's basement, and you know.
Yeah, sort of like me and Dee Boone. Me and Dee Boone did. Didn't even know you could do gigs, really. Just played after school. We used a bedroom.
There was nothing really around either, like venues and such. There was a couple of things, but it was just not for us.
Yeah. So
it was really sort of insular.
Because you're saying early 80s, because that's when I played there with Minutemen in 84 in Hull. But I can't remember the name of the venue. But there wasn't a lot of places for you to play in those days. So you're making music just basically for yourselves, which is the best way, especially at start. And so, okay, this band breaks up because you guys go different ways, making a living. How did you stay with music?
It was always there. I mean, I knew at some level I had to go and do it. I would just, you know, practice by myself. And
also, you had like one-man band. At this point, you're just doing music on your own.
Sort of, yeah. Just me. Later on, I ran into a couple of other guys. There's a really interesting guy named Michette. Really great guy. He's in a band called Flecked and Big Sky.
Okay.
He's re-entering music right now. Really great guy. He's sort of taken a break, and now he's back into it. And he's really great. Good guy, great songs.
You should flow me some of his stuff, too.
Misha's great, yeah, I will.
So, but you guys make a band together at this point?
We play together from time to time, not a whole lot. It's his, it's his show, so, you know.
So you were, like, helping him, backing him up?
A bit, yeah. He would help me exchange ideas.
Okay.
Yeah, really nice guy. Very cool.
Gigs?
I enjoyed companies quite a bit, yeah.
And from there, where did you go?
From there, we're pretty much in the present day.
Okay. Well, I was wondering what was the road that led up to the Kings of the Lower Town?
Oh, you know, it's just something I had to do. I always felt like I wanted to do like a good sort of basic blues music that really interests me personally. one day I was walking home from work after, like, probably the worst day ever, and realized I'd be crazy if I didn't try it. Because, I mean, life is, you know, it happens so quick, and that sounds like a cliche, but when you're walking home after a bad shift, it's like, wow, let's do the things that really make you happy. So
Kings of Lower Town was born out of that experience. Yeah, okay. Is there a Lower Town in Pembroke?
No, there's a Lower Town in Ottawa.
In Ottawa, okay.
Yeah.
And what, is this kind of a neighborhood?
It is, yeah. It's like different sections of town.
Sure.
That's, yeah. And that's where I live. I've spent all my adult life there nearly. Right now it's Thanksgiving weekend in Canada, so I'm in my hometown visiting.
Back in Pembroke.
Yeah.
But when you go back to Ottawa, you'll be in the Lower Town.
Yes, sir.
And I know this sounds a little literal, but is this part of town like lower in the ground? Where's this name, the etymology? Where's it? You have any idea?
It was originally a French name called Basseville.
Uh-huh.
I don't know exactly why they called it Lower Town. But like they would, it was the French-Irish part of town.
Okay.
So originally, I imagine it was the lower part of the area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not and the top of the hill.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe more Econo part of town. I don't know. Maybe it meant they meant lower in that sense. But interesting name, you know. And then the Kings of the Lower Town. So, you know, I don't know. In my mind, it sounds like you want to be one of the shot callers, huh? Well, start your own band, right? Write your own songs, you know, play your own gigs, right? I'm not trying to say, like, ruling over people or anything, but just, you got a need for individual expression.
You could go that way, yeah. It wasn't, like you said, wanting to be the top dog or anything. Yeah. It was just, like, personally, I'm going to do this, and if it doesn't happen or go anywhere, that's okay by me. I know that's, you know, this is just for me. I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
Well, not just for you, because you did get a group of guys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But they're gonna help you realize your vision, your songs.
They most certainly did. Without them, that would never happen.
Yeah, right.
Like, just getting started, it was very
important. Well, let's talk about them. Who are these guys?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, Michette, Jordan Zadarowski, Conrad Christink.
These cats were Kings of Lower Town. Okay.
Well, sort of in and out.
Okay.
You know, back and forth. Sort of a loose group.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty good guys. There was another drummer, Tim Watson. He was really great. He was in the band. He was really awesome. Watson was a really great drummer.
Like earlier days?
About the same time, like within a 3 or 4 year span.
Okay.
Yeah, he was really good.
And right now, who makes up the Kings of Lower Town?
Right now, it's me. I'm writing, like, the music. Jordan Zadrozny is helping me with production and performance, like recording. He's doing really great guitar work on it. He's doing some really amazing solos. Like, I'm really lucky to have his generosity helping me. He really is, you know, it's me and him right now.
Okay.
Good guy.
You were talking about the blues. What kind of band? Do you have, like, influences from other bands or musicians?
Sort of an Ottawa Valley thing, really.
Okay, so, yeah, people you actually play with.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, and looking towards other blues influences, not a whole lot. You know, it was just something that I sort of felt more than heard.
Yeah, like, sure.
Yeah.
And, God, you go pretty far back with Jordan.
Yeah, I don't really recollect too many memories without sort of having him there. Like, I mean, early stuff, of course, but we were always familiar with each other.
Sure, sure.
Schoolmates. Yeah. Really good guy.
And you got a single coming up.
I do, yeah.
You know, what's the story behind this? You know, I've played a lot of Kings of Lower Town on the Watt from Pedro show, but this is stuff that's coming in the next week or two, right?
Thank you for that. I do appreciate it. Thank you very much for that. When you started playing that stuff, that was, blew my hair back. And that really sort of pulled me up and made me feel like I could do more. So thank you for that. I don't think I've ever actually said that to you directly. And so it was awesome. It really was awesome. And the single that's coming out.
Yeah.
It's going to be Shotgun Preacher and Woodpile. These songs have existed previously, but I've always wanted to do some vinyl. I felt it was time to commit to, you know, getting out of the digital world and putting out a single on vinyl. I've always wanted to do that. And these days, I feel it's important to have tangible objects instead of just digital files. For some reason, it's there, it exists. And I think that's important. I can't express it further as to why I think it's important. To kind of relate it to a good book. You know, you have a good book, it's there, it's going to exist. You can go back to it whenever you want. And it's a good reference point.
Yeah.
Shotgun Preacher came out, I guess, in April or May. And it got a bit of legs to it. I really enjoyed making that song and writing it. Jordan helped me make that song. He's all over that. Gave it an amazing sound. Knew exactly what I wanted before I even could express, which was such a great thing as well. It was like, just, wow, you nailed it. Like, it was just a shorthand. He knew it. I knew it. It was done. I was really proud of that one. And Woodpile last year, Mish Jeté helped me with that. Again, you know, he really sort of, you know, inspired me to get going on this and make this all work. That's what I did. So those were the two songs that we decided to put on vinyl.
Sure.
I've got more songs coming up soon. Working on a new album. It's called Mississippi Flood. That's coming out probably, there's some stuff in the can already. But getting back to the single, those are the two songs that will be, you know, released. And it's fitting because they're interrelated. They're different, I feel. And it just sort of marks a moment that I'm really happy with.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward. But eventually these two songs are going to be joined with others to make a whole album. Wow.
I've got a couple EPs out. I've never known how to make an album. I can put EPs together, small ideas that sort of work. I've always wondered how, like, these artists make big albums. It blows my mind all the time. What are the common threads that develop? You know, how do you go those 12 songs and not, you know, lose focus? It's such an accomplishment. I see people doing this all the time, and I've never known how to do it. It's quite something. People think it's nothing, but really, I think it's, you know, you have to go start with track one. You have to go to track two, three, four, five. Sometimes albums can go up to, you know, 15 songs. Lately, you know, you're getting shorter albums traditionally, like 10 songs. Even then, that's a super accomplishment to do something each time and have it interesting and have it different and not repeat yourself. Is, you know, not many people can do that. I mean, you guys can do it. I've seen you do that. You know, Stooges would do that. Amazing. You know, you need to get other people doing that as well. And I just, you know, I'm not in that realm at all. I can do good, solid songs and put them together as EPs. That's where I'm at right now. And I think that's, for me as a person, that's pretty awesome. And that's what I'm going to do until maybe another skill set develops. I don't know. I don't see myself ever really getting there. I could push a whole bunch of songs together and call it an album, but I don't think it would be. There'd have to be like a theme to it, a concept. Otherwise, it's just, you know, songs that sort of come together.
Yeah, I think everybody's got their own journey and their own idea of what they're trying to do or make good on. So if you feel a couple songs at a time is where it's at, And I think that's completely valid there, Mike.
I also think you can pull off a song and have it be any, like, I mean, one song, it can deliver a lot. It can change your afternoon if you're liking it, you know. Doesn't have to be a whole album. It's the thought process and the attitude, you know. Oh, Link yeah. never really made huge, awesome albums, but he had killer songs. Amazing.
Yeah, you can mix it up. My last album was one song, 30 parts.
I remember that. It was based on an artwork, wasn't it?
Yeah, a couple artworks. I used some of the visuals as kind of reference points.
But this they is were the just, one where... The, sorry, go ahead, sir.
It was just more like springboards. I like, inspirations where you can draw parallels. Not know anything even about maybe the person you're bouncing ideas off. That's what's interesting about humans to me and their expressions, how they can be kind of...
This is the album where you're writing more Minutemen type songs, if I recollect right. They feel like more Minutemen songs, somewhat.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to do that style again without being nostalgic, and so I tried using that style of music that I worked with in those days to talk about something really contemporary with me now, which is, being in middle age, which is something I would have never done as a Minuteman. But I like that style. I wanted, because I didn't want to just go down memory road. I wanted to make it somehow relevant to now and not do a total nostalgia trip.
Well, it wasn't. It was just really good music.
For me, I mean, this was a personal thing. I just felt I owed the guys in the Minuteman to contribute something in the now and not, you know, just totally take from the old days. Sometimes to get too much, sentimental about stuff.
Those records were amazing.
I know, but it kind of belongs to that time and stuff. But I did like the style. You know, the story actually comes from me helping those guys make the We Jammy Kano documentary and me listening to that music again after not really... You know, it made me sad to hear that stuff. But when I heard it again, I wanted to do it. But I wanted to be careful about it. I didn't want to just do an I Love Lucy rerun on it. I wanted to somehow make it part of what's important to me these days, which was, a middle-aged punk rocker, which is a very strange situation for me to be in. But
the Minutemen were like...
Men were young men, writing about being young men, trying to become aware of their world. It was just another place. But the motifs, the styles, actually we borrowed some stuff, too, from some bands we heard from England, like Wire or Pop Group. And, some U.S. stuff, too, like funk and R&B.
That was an interesting time. Like, all that stuff on SST was, like... I don't know, you guys were taking chances, and it would always work awesome. And you got the sense that, like, what's happening here? You'd listen to it, and it would be like, well, what is going on? I have to listen to this again right away. And you'd listen to it and be like, you know, really amazing. I first got into the Minutemen. You guys opened up for REM and like on this college circuit, and before the Minutemen I was a huge REM fan. I had to have everything about them. And then, you know, you guys opened up for them. And
I don't know how
I found out about that. I'm like, who are these guys?
Well, we didn't know how they found out about us either, except when we met them we found out they knew a lot about a lot of musics. So we knew nothing about them. We had to buy a record to see what they sounded like when they asked us. And they turned out to be really nice guys and very interesting people.
What's Bill actually like? Bill Berry.
Yeah, they're all.
He seems so interesting to me.
Yeah, all four of them really were. Bill was more, he's like Scotty and the Stooges. A little more, stoic, internal.
Very he did a lot of writing, too. I mean, you'd think it would be more Peter Buck, but, I mean, Bill came up with a lot of interesting stuff.
Yeah, well, I don't know the particulars about their band. I can just tell you how it was being with them that tour. And a lot of the audiences didn't like us. I know the record label they were on didn't like us. We had a lot of trouble with everyone except them. They were beautiful to us, the four guys in the band. They really were. And
You still keep in touch?
It ended up being our last tour. I see him around. I played with Peter. He had some band with some baseball. With Steve Wynn about baseball. Played with
the baseball project.
And I think the last time with REM was Stooges in Spain a few years ago. But I see him now and then. I mean, they don't live in Southern California. Did something with Ronnie for Michael's movie. Michael was involved with a movie called Velvet Goldmine. So, yeah, time to time. That was really... So, that's how you saw us, is because we were opening up. I mean, a lot of people, that was their first impression or first time they were exposed to us because... That scene, that's when college radio was starting to get big, was from REM. And even punk rockers started going to college. So we were exposed
to... the last really great times in music.
Well, we were exposed to a different kind of crowd. And a lot of those people didn't dig it. But then later on, I think maybe they changed their mind. I don't know. I meet a lot of people, they say the first time they saw what I was doing was with the Minutemen opening for REM.
I heard about you. I never actually saw you at that particular time.
Yeah.
I read about, like, the Minutemen.
Well, you know, the college scene wasn't really that... They didn't know a lot about punk. They knew some stuff about New Wave and stuff, but... actually, U.S. punk scene was pretty small, you know, when it started. It got bigger with hardcore and stuff, but it was pretty small. And we learned it from going to gigs in Hollywood and... I mean, everybody's a student in some kind of classroom. And then there's always somebody who's been around even just a little bit before you. And, you know, it can make all the difference in the world. And it's all about people in the old days, and I still think nowadays it's about people. So that's why I found it interesting about your musical story. Now, you make these recordings with the Kings of the Lower Town. You do gigs also, right?
Not a whole lot, so a couple, you know. If I'm doing gigs, I want to do my best.
Okay.
So, you know, I feel like I'm giving over my nervous system when I'm playing a live show. It's something I have to work on.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's scary to play gigs.
It's very scary for me.
Me too. And I do it all the time, and it still doesn't get easier. But, yeah, it's interesting doing. I was just wondering, your situation there in Ottawa and Pembroke, and is it easy to do gigs?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing one or two. Not a whole lot. You know, I wish I could do more. I'm just... My personality type is I like being home. I like being home with my wife. A life on the road, is, you know, you really have to have your stuff together. You have to know exactly what you're doing. You have to have an excellent plan to do it. You know, I just want to be a good person to my wife, and playing music might take me away from that live all the time. So that relationship is important. I don't want to be away too much. So I'm keeping it local, not a whole lot.
Yeah. I think the Steely Dan guys during the years that made those first six records, never toured, except one little one. I don't think you have to tour.
It's important.
Some bands, all they do is tour, and they don't even make records. So, you know, everybody's different, I think.
I would like to play more. I'm going to work on it. I think it's important, but not as important as, you know, my more domestic life. I like making music. That's more important.
And right now you're thinking about music in a document form, right? This 7-inch, the vinyl.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I've come to realize that more and more. When we first started Minuteman, we thought records were just like flyers to get people to the gigs. We thought it was all about playing gigs. Because we came from arena rock, you know. So we didn't know about clubs until punk. And we really liked the clubs compared to our previous experience with live gigs, which was sitting in the dark in these big sports arenas and auditoriums. And it was a nightmare, you know, in comparison. So we thought everything was about the gig. And the records were just flyers to try to get people to the gig. Now I have a different kind of thought about records. They're kind of dying. They'll be here after you're gone, you know.
Just one of those things. Are you going to be playing more shows, Reese, more coming up?
Oh, yeah, I got a couple. I got two gigs this week. And I got a couple of tours coming up, a Europe one and a U.S. one.
How many shows a year do you play, do you think? 200?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I play
a lot.
How
do you keep up?
It's like anything else. If you look at it that way, yeah, it looks impossible, but real life is about the day to day, and you get into it, and the sun rises, the sun sets. If you look at it so, you know, mammoth of a thing, yeah, I'd probably scare the hell out of you. And I do have a lot of anxiety at the beginning of tours, but then you get into the day to day, and you do it, you know. And it's interesting, you know. I don't recommend it for everybody, of course, but I feel fortunate to have my shot at, and it's a great classroom. I learn a lot of stuff from it. The main thing is to, the main thing for me is to get my guys back safe. Then the next thing is, play good for people. They work hard all week, so I want to give them a good gig. And then, you know, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh is, you're not in your hometown, so there's a lot of stuff to check out. You know, everybody can't live in the same pad. So, and also, everybody doesn't do things the same way. So you can, if you let your mind be open, you can check out and learn from this stuff. And it's like being in a real-life library, a library of real life or something in a trippy way. So I think it's the way you approach it. It can be a beat down. It can wear on you. You have to watch your health. There's a lot of things about tour. A lot of things can go wrong. When one comes to the end, I'm very grateful that I made it through another one. But I was interested in your single here, if you were going to, like, do some gigs to, like, maybe call attention to it or something like that. Do you go to the big towns, like Montreal and Toronto?
You know, I don't go to Toronto a whole lot. I love Montreal. I go there with my wife all the time.
No, I mean about playing. I'm talking about playing.
I played a couple of gigs in Montreal. I haven't played a gig in Toronto at all.
I've had good gigs in both towns. Different scenes.
Did you ever find your bass?
I got a couple basses. Oh, that one, the one that got stolen. No. It's out there. Hopefully somebody's using it. You know, I got given 3 free basses after that. 3 different people. A guy named Andy from near Rochester, New York. A guy named Dan in San Diego. Adam Yauch gave me a bass. So I know it's sad. I've had that for a little bit, right? Did a little gigs. But I also got these other basses. And they're only things. And hopefully somebody's using it. That was kind of sad and stuff. But I never blamed Montreal for it. And I do have my health, you know, which is kind of more precious. It's kind of hurts to lose things. But then I got the 3 gifts right away, you know. So.
How's the cycling coming along?
Not as good because of my hurt knee. You know, I can't go up big hills. The paddling, no problem, because that's all waist up. But, that's some of the stuff I do when I'm not on tour. to see how the Skype makes some funky sounds. People, if you hear that, that's not me on my synthesizer. It's his software that I'm using to talk to Mike here. Boing, 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 ding, ding, bong. There's little sounds that come over here. Yeah, that's what I do when I'm not on tour. I'm on tour, I'm trying to hobble around the towns and hoof around, see what I can, and take shots. I take shots here, too. You probably know about that. Actually, a cat in Montreal put out a book of my Minutemen lyrics translated to Quebecois. French, you know, which his name Chapeau, and he's a great cat. There is a great music scene in Montreal. But Toronto's got one, too, and enjoy playing there. I was just saying because Ottawa seems in between both those towns almost.
Ottawa's closer to Montreal.
Oh, okay.
You can be in Montreal from Ottawa really quickly, you know, 2 hours and you're there, downtown.
Okay.
Toronto, farther away.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still a lovely place, Toronto.
Because you're on the, it's on the border where you're at.
Yeah, I'm looking out right now across at Quebec.
Right.
My father-in-law lives on the river.
That's interesting, yeah. You know, border towns, river towns, they're interesting. I always, especially in the older days, you know, I'm thinking when I'm in those kind of towns because rivers were the highways in the old days, you know. So I really get into that, and this goes back to Minutemen days, you know, you're in a town, it's not just there for your gig. There's a whole history. There's a whole story why that town's there. And I find it interesting. And one of the righteous things about the work I do is I get to go, and it's not a very long time. A lot of times it's just one day. But I can see, you know, spend a little time and wonder about, wow, what went on here? What helped build this? Why is this here? Why is that there?
You'll have to come for a visit. The Ottawa Valley is one of these places that...
Yeah, I would, because I know every time I've been in Ottawa was just a brief, brief time. What I know about it is government town. It's the federal capital, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You get outside of that and you...
Actually, that tour that you saw me for Hyphenated Man, my guitar man and Miss Peak, who was a photograph in that tour, both were very sick and I had to take them to a clinic in Ottawa. And so very grateful.
Good health care.
Yes. Yes. Which to me is a great, whatever you call it, national defense policy, is like taking care of your people's health, you know. And both Tom Watson and Miss Peak got mended up. They had two different kinds of, one had a virus, one had a bacterial infection with their throats and lungs. And man, the health, like I was telling you before, on tour, weather and health are very acute. They're very big in your life.
How's it doing now? How's Tom now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they healed up. They healed up by the end of that tour because the medical attention they got in Ottawa was excellent.
Good.
And it was econo. Besides that. But, yeah, most grateful. So that's why I remember the day I was there actually had some California weather. It was really nice. Wow. The sun was out, everything, you know. I always, when I came to Pedro from Virginia, you know, I always compare things to my town, like the weather and stuff. It's kind of spoiled here. So the plans beyond the single, doing a couple gigs, is maybe working on an album.
Maybe.
Okay. Because you say in another way you think you're ready for an album.
I mean, I'd like to accomplish that, but, you know, I'd have to just say maybe. It's going to be EPs and singles.
Right.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
A larger idea, I don't know. Going to start making more music here in my hometown. Because I think that's important. Because there's, you know, the economy here isn't so great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not a whole lot going on here. It could be, you know, it could really use some, I don't know how to express that, just a vision, development. It's a great spot. People should come here, make albums, enjoy this place. It's really nice. Going to do that.
I think that's a great thing you're doing for your town, then. That's great. Because, you know, some people's idea is, well, you cut and you run to the big town because that's where people make it. Maybe things are different, though, with internet and stuff. Maybe you don't have to do that so much anymore.
I met this lady once. She lives, I don't know where she lives now, but she's from this place called Fogo Islands. She was born and raised there, and she left. There was nothing there for her. She comes to Ottawa and, you know, starts a life, goes back to visit, and an acquaintance from many years ago says, well, you know, how are you doing? And she realized right away she had to come back and, you know, do something there. She wound up doing something really amazing. My wife and I sort of saw this unfolding. And I realized that would be something important to do, be supportive in my own home community. I wasn't sure exactly how to do that. And then I realized, you know, this is how I can maybe help in my own small way to support a local business and, of course, get some musical enjoyment.
Yeah, that's interesting. Grassroots.
I guess, yeah, if that's the word for it. It was just one of those times where he thought, well, yeah, it's time to do something like this. It was a kick in the pants. Wow. So, yeah, that's pretty much, you know, I think people should come to Pembroke.
Well, you know, this leads me to the last thing I want to ask you. If somebody was going to ask you for some advice, what would you tell them in regards to music?
Oh, in regards to pursuing it?
Or just anything. You know, anything. I know the standard questions about the racket, how to make it in this, you know.
Well, it's a really different time now.
But I'm not asking you that. I'm asking you what you've gotten out of music. What would you say to a young person who asked you for some advice?
Enjoy it. Listen to it all the time.
Yeah.
Find things that you like in it. Learn how to play an instrument.
Yeah.
It's a great way to make a friend. Develop your skills. Go out. Enjoy it. If you think you can make money at it, well, good for you. Don't expect to make a whole lot, but just go in with a good attitude and, you know, make connections. It's a good way to be friends with people and just really enjoy it.
That's some good thoughts. I want to thank you so much, Mike, for sharing and being on the show.
I want to thank you as well. Thank you.
And I wish you big luck and good fortune with the Kings of Lower Town, and can't wait to hear the new stuff. We'll play them with this spiel here when you flow them on to me.
Probably I'll be sending along very, very soon.
Yeah, thank probably the so beginning much. Of November, huh?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks again for making the Pedro Pembroke connection and let us share in thoughts here, Mike.
Come and see us. Come and see us.
Okay, brother.
Thank.
First chance I get.
Thank you.
Okay, out. What from Pedro Show, and there you have it. Mike McKee there in Pembroke, Ontario, Canada. Talking to Watt here in Pedro, California, U.S. via the Skype, making that Pedro Pembroke connection. Very interesting. I want to thank Mike again for coming aboard Watt from Pedro Show. We're at the end of the first hour of the November 9, 2013 edition. Hold tight for hour two. November 9, 2013 is the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
From Pedro's show. Started the second hour out with something live from the Velvet Underground, the famous amp tape. I think it was at the Boston Tea Party in 69. And they laid the on top of the amplifier was the tape recorder, Brother Lou Reed. So it's kind of, yeah, from that perspective. Interesting, and you know, we lost him last week, so still shook me up pretty big time just to think about it, to hear that again. Lou jamming. It was Ferry Boat Bill. I think Sterling, the rhythm guitar man, ended up a tugboat man, or did it for a while. After Velvet Underground, Ferry Boat Bill, we had Kings of Lower Town. This is Mike McKee, who last hour I had the interview via Skype with him up north. Shotgun Preacher, something new. And then some friends of his, demo from called Betty Brought Vodka from Flexion. No, Flecton, Big Sky, sorry. And then Blink of the Star with We Draw Lines and another brand new Kings of Lower Town tune, Woodpile. Again, I want to thank Mike much for taking the time to talk with me. And, relate some of his journey through music. Very interesting. I remember that Maverick gig up in Ottawa. North American tour, first one of Hyphenated Man. And, I mean, you can go read the diary, but I'm pretty sure I had a fouled meatball sandwich from maybe Subway or something. I remember getting up on stage, I got a bad knee, so I had to really reach and hang on to a pole, and the exertion made me bring forth some bowel content. But, it was time to do the gig, so I wasn't going to, lollygag or bellyache, and so got to it, but Raul told me after there was an odor. Mrs. Peake, she was on this tour, in fact, documented with photographs, very sick. Her and Tom, I both brought to doctor clinics here in, I think it was Ottawa, because they were dying of flu. And, she played bass. You're not going to hear her here. This is a guy named Johnny from DMF playing bass, but this is a band Mr. Peake was in for like one gig in Fresno, California. Soon to be mother of two, Mrs. Peake, traveling to Vietnam right now with her husband, Bill.
Well, you come by this morning just like you've done before. This time you caught my lover slipping out of my back door. I'm just a trifling woman. I trifle all the time. When I'm not driving, baby, you know I got it all in my mind. You know I love you, baby. I love you just the same. Yeah, I know the way I treat you is a low-down, dirty shame. But I'm a trifling woman. I trifle all.
you need to get treatment for this bad hell. I do.
Circle like a dog on a chain. They put you back in the corner so you won't dig beneath the gate. They try to limit your radius and take away your control. They give you 3 drops of water but you can't quite reach the bowl. You're running out of solutions, barking out for a truce. The worn out circle's a prison. The rusted chain is a bloody noose. They finally break your spirit, so you don't even try. They leave you out there forever, till you just lay down and die. We'll be right back.
she stretches before me. I wrap myself awkwardly upon her.
Finished up the second hour with a big hunk of music there. Started with Triflin' Women by Catty Ness and The Revenge. As I was saying, Johnny from DMF, I got to play with him last week on Halloween up in they call Mid-City, like Pico and Hauser. Somewhere on there. He made the hell right from Orange County. Anyway, he told me he ended up playing in this band. They found out Miss Peak was in that band for like one gig. You can go to our website, Peakness, PEAKNESS.com, for her insights to her world. Incredible person. After that, we had DMF, which is Johnny's OC band. Stiff for a Stiff. It's a new batch of music for me. Thank you, Johnny. Then we had Passion Killers, which have Maeve Mills doing Shipbuilding, which is, I think, a cover. Big fan of Maeve Mills. He's back on the bass, too. Watch out, you people there in Leeds. Art Trip and the Static Sound after that with Hex. Torture Town with Noose. Yeah, Torture Town. So there's a connection with the fairy godmothers out of Charleston there. Palmetto Flag Land. The Unawares with Asian Snake. After that was After by the Freaks. I think Jonathan Hall. It's a new trio he's got going. Jonathan Hall from Backbiter. Yeah, somebody told me Bob Lee broke his foot. That benefit. Fell off the curb or something. Damn. Heal up, Bob Lee. Love you much. The Man Who Fell Out of the Sky by the Black Widows. That's got Adam Baum on bass. And Mask, too, I think. Dining Car Chase, Dirty Beaches. There's some more Canada right there. Though I think Alex is back in Berlin. Boy or Girl by Freesia. They're SF. Enough to Calm You Down by Allegheny Whitefish Tobacco. Mr. Tom out of Pittsburgh. Finally, Malvillian. Detective Instinct. Ollie had me read some Karen Schumer words on this EP called Schumer Songs. We're at the end of the second hour, November 9, 2013 edition of the Watt from Pedro show. Hold tight for hour two. November 9, 2013, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show. Now, last week was Halloween, or whatever, 9, 10 days ago. right before that, I played a Long Beach gig, and Luke from Roosterhead gave me a compilation he made specially for Halloween. It's called California Creeps, and it's a bunch of buddies of his, you know, that him and his Roosterhead band, you know, joined together with in gigs and whatever, musical fabric. And I didn't get a chance to play it on the show closest to Halloween. Damn, sorry. But Halloween ain't too far back that we can't play this. There's a lot of interesting stuff. This is all Orange County, Southern California, Long Beach. I think Roosterhead themselves are out of Long Beach. So I find it really interesting. I hadn't heard of any of these bands before, and I'm just so grateful to Luke for turning me on to this that's going on. Of course, there's a Roosterhead tune there too, but I'm going to play the whole California Creeps presented by Roosterhead. It says, beware caution, tricks and treats. Oh, look, there's a little note in here. Ah, Halloween, that wonderful time of year when you can go to work dressed as a monster from space, howl at the moon in public, and reluctantly show ID during your late-night toilet paper run. But here in Southern California, it can be hard to get into that Halloween spirit. Ominous owl and bat sounds get drowned out by the din of the freeways. Fallen palm branches are no substitute for mounds of multicolored leaves, and the neighborhood kids routinely pass your house by as they shuttle off towards an avalanche of candy from the nearest hilltop gated community. Who's going to give you a treat? We are. You deserve one. And we're here to bring you a whole watching hour of original tunes from the twisted brains and decaying hearts of a dozen SoCal artists. So sit back, take off your mask, enjoy a sonic sugar high from the land of endless sun and spookiness. So, without further ado, California Creeps, presented by Roosterhead.
Dig my grave, you bet your life that no one else will. Oh! Hiding behind masks and mirrors. I've been looking everywhere cause I lost my heart. Have you seen it anywhere? I've been looking everywhere cause I lost my heart. Through the blood that hangs in the air. I've been searching through the fields. I've been way out top. I've been digging through the mud. I've been looking everywhere cause I lost my heart. I last saw it in the hands of my one.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
tum-tum. Candy corn, candy beans, for Grandma wore the poison thing.
Monster checker, candy for pinholes. Monster checker, candy for pinholes. Grandma's neighbor gave that to me.
Thank you. know what to do, and you will make the clean break.
From Pedro Show. I want to thank once again Luke Roosterhead for turning me on to this California Creeps compilation for Halloween 2013, even though it's 9-10 days later. We had a good gig that night. Me, Tom Raoul, did a Miss Men gig. like I was telling you, in the Midtown part of Los Angeles, and all had the same mask. I found the same kind of mask, kind of a Munch thing, but I was told it was actually maybe ripped off of his idea for some B-movie. So, whatever. The way the eyes were in the mouth, I could breathe and play pretty good. And I just love dressing up for Halloween. And hell, if I was going to do it on the weekend before, you know, it was a Thursday night. We did it on Thursday night. It was the Olistis, the good people. First time I've been to their pad. Really nice folks. Anyway, back to this comp that Luke gave me that we just heard for final music of this edition, the Rock from Pedro show. Started with John Carillo doing Gravedigger. Then we heard Curse of Franken-chicken. Maybe like Frankenstein, huh? By the Radioactive Chicken Heads. I should have looked at that. Hell is for Lovers by Mae McDonahue and Company. I think the state of Virginia had a slogan like Virginia's for Lovers. Yeah, maybe on the license plates or something. Special kind of font, too, I remember, a few years ago. Maybe not anymore. Then Roosterhead, which is Luke plays drums for, doing the Ghoul Parade. After that was the Grinning Ghosts with Searching for My Heart. Followed by Candy Check by Carl. Did you hear the question mark at the end there? Because that's how he spells his band name. Carl. K-A-R-L. Question mark. Then Mas Lengua from Popsicle. Trippy way of spelling Popsicle. More tongue, I guess, in Spanish. I think. Time and Energy after that with Bare Thoughts. Sonar Syntax by the Vespertines. More heady stuff here as for celebrating Halloween. Devil's Night by Nimbus Earth. Devil's Night, I think, is actually the night before in Detroit. Maybe. My memory. Remember, who was telling me? Somebody saw a Minutemen gig last time we played Detroit. It was on Halloween. And I remember I wore an old Mason's outfit I found in a thrift store that tour in New Jersey. D. Boone said I shouldn't have worn it. I don't think you should wear something like that. Which was trippy. D. Boone wasn't... He's pretty open-minded, but maybe some things were freaky to him. It had ostrich feathers and a hat, and it was trippy. I still got it, a little suitcase you carry around. Over 100 years old, I think. Program Love with Pre-Programmed after that. And finally, Heidi, the main score by Jacqueline Quintanar. Thank you again, Luke, from Roosterhead for flowing that. Turned me on to a lot of stuff that's happening only miles from my Pedro town here. I like hearing stuff from all over the world, of course, but it's also interesting to find out what's happening right near where you are. Tomorrow we travel far, me, Tom, Raul, to do these two gigs in Brazil, Monday and Tuesday. Come back Wednesday. I got a second main gig tonight, yeah. Man, am I a space kitten or what? Space mouse? I can't be space. Stuff like that. Pizzo Gerzo. In Orange County, Anaheim. But there's one next week also. In maybe Eagle Rock, I think. I think I'm giving a talk, too. Some kind of summit, music summit, that Maggie Vale's putting on. At the Hoot page, you can find out. MikeWatt.com. Kind of a trippy show. Really glad I got to talk with
Mike McKee, and though it wasn't in the moment, I didn't edit it or anything, so just like we were. Thanks again, Mike. And keep on with your music, brother. It's been the November 9th, 2013 edition of the Watt from Pedro Show. See you next week. Everybody, keep your powder dry.